You're listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
A special episode today here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Welcome back, everybody. I am your host, Nate Lull, as we are bringing back John Philby today from Springbrook. John came on about a year ago to the show to talk about the different sports activities and events that Springbrook has to offer their athletes. And that was a great episode if you want to go back in the archives and listen to that. John is joined today by Rachel Schoons, who now helps him with the sports programs at Springbrook. And Rachel has a pretty cool story herself, being a two-sport athlete, soccer and softball, at SUNY Delhi. And there's a lot of connections with other guests that we've had on the show who were teammates of Rachel's during her time at SUNY Delhi. So it's so great to have both of them come on to talk about Springbrook here today. If you're not familiar with Springbrook, you can check them out at springbrookny.org. They are the leader in providing support and services to people with developmental disabilities, and they're proud to support over 1,000 people and families across the state of New York and beyond. So a huge thank you to John and Rachel for coming in today. Of course, we want to thank all our special sponsors before we get into it today here on the Nate Lull Podcast, but today we are recognizing that Springbrook is a longtime sponsor here of the Nate Lull Podcast, of NateLull.com, and all of my sports work at WCDO. I can't thank them enough for stepping up and helping me to bring these types of stories and this type of journalism to our local listeners. So again, a huge thanks to Springbrook. You can check them out online at springbrookny.org. All right, 2:45 today. That's our episode. We're glad to have you back for another edition of the Nate Lull Podcast. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Episode 245 today here on the Nate Lull Podcast. And we're glad to have our friends back once again from Springbrook, as we did an episode with John Philby last year, talking about everything that you guys do with your sports program there. But excited to have John back, as well as Rachel Schoons, who is here with us today, who has a unique journey as well. So, John, we'll start with you right off the bat here. The basketball tournament's coming up. I got a chance to come over last year and watch that, and it was just a really fun day. I believe Springbrook were the champs last year, if I remember correctly. It was a lot of fun. But tell us about the tournament coming up this year.
Yeah, so thanks for having me back
again. Yeah.
The tournament is April 13th. It's Saturday. We kind of start the games around 10-ish. And then we'll have it at both locations, the main campus off Route 28 and then the Oneonta campus off on Route 7, the old St. Mary's School. And we're basically going to have hopefully seven to eight teams and play with, 5-on-5 basketball. And we'll have our skills, individual athletes competing as well that day. So it'll be a nice, long, fun day of Special Olympics basketball and medals.
Traditionally, where do the other teams come from that come for the tournament?
We've had teams come from various areas. It kind of varies year to year. We usually get one or two teams out of the Binghamton area. We usually get a team out of Saratoga. We also have teams come out of Ithaca. I've had teams come out of Onondaga near Syracuse area. So wow. They kind of come and travel towards us. We're kind of at a unique location in Oneonta. You know, we're not too far, but we're kind of, far enough sometimes where teams are willing to travel.
Rachel, we'll throw it over to you. How long have you been at Springbrook, and kind of what was your journey to get there and join the staff?
So I've been at Springbrook for about 3 years, and I interned with John and fell in love with it. I loved the kids. I've always wanted to work with this population, and it was kind of always like a dream of mine. I kind of fell into it during college. I changed my major, was part of it, and then I was like, oh, I kind of enjoy this, so that's how I ended up at Springbrook.
When you got to Springbrook initially, even as an intern, what was it about Springbrook that kind of made you feel like, hey, this is a place where I want to spend time going forward? Like,
I've realized just being there, even just for the tournament last year, I'm like, there's something different or special about this place. Like the staff is really nice and just the whole energy and the vibe there. Like, is that a feeling you got when you first got there?
Yeah, it definitely was a feeling that I had when I first got there. The vibe was, it was like a family vibe. Like you could joke around with each other, but still get the job done type of situation. And it was just, everyone was there for each other. Like you never felt like you were alone. Like there's always people around you. There's always kids around you. Like it was just, it's energetic sometimes.
I think that's important because one of the topics we always have here on the podcast, and John, I'll kind of throw this one back to you, is like so many of our young listeners are like, how do I find a career that I don't hate? It's that 9 to 5 where you're staring at the clock all day and you're like, this is not fun. And a lot of kids, I think, are nervous of that, or maybe they see, unfortunately, their parents going through that, having a career they don't love. But like you guys love it. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, what keeps you going in this career? Is it that love of like, I snap my fingers and the day it goes so fast?
I mean, there are days that are, of course, rough and, you know, it's hard. But yeah, for the most part, it's every day's different. And that's something I enjoy. I don't like monotonous like work. I'm not somebody that can sit down and just hang out by a computer. I just can't do it. I'm too, I think, stir crazy when it comes to my energy. And, you know, I want to be moving. I want to be doing something. And, you know, just seeing the changes and the effect of your presence on the individuals we work with and the growth and development and the socialization and, you know, just the change that you're making and the difference in their lives and make their lives better to make them more successful in the world that they live in.
Rachel, is it the same for you? Just, I know we just asked you about the vibe and stuff, but are you kind of the same thing? I'm the same way. Like I can't do the same thing every day and it would drive me nuts.
I never spend any time in my office. You can ask anyone at my job. I'm never in there. They're like, well, we called your office. And I was like, yeah, I'm just out doing different stuff. As like a rec therapist, like I'm always trying to find different ways to evolve the kids, build their independence and find new things that like super enjoy. And that's where like Special Olympics really came into my life, because like you watch some of these kids and they really enjoy it. And it just makes my heart super happy to just see that.
It's great. It's such a great program. And, you know, where are you from originally? Because we made the connection that, you know, you played 2 sports, soccer and softball at SUNY Delhi. You were on some really good soccer teams there with a bunch of other locals that of course I've covered here in their high school journey. But what was your hometown and how did you get to SUNY Delhi?
So I'm originally from Deansboro, New York. It's about an hour away from Oneonta. I played for Waterville High School. I was a 3-sport athlete there. I actually ran cross country my senior year, but up until my senior year, I played basketball as well. I just moved up through ASO, kind of just played. I didn't really have any intentions on playing in college. I figured I wasn't ready to give up my sports, so that's how I ended up playing in college. But I never reached out to, like, get recruited or anything, but I just played my sport. I played club teams and just wanted to play. That's all I wanted.
Yeah. We'll take a little detour here, but we always ask guests who had the opportunity to play in college, how did you make that decision on how do you balance academics and athletics and into your decision, I guess? Because it's like, yeah, I want to keep playing, but academics have to come first. So what was it about Delhi that led you there?
I would have to say definitely when I met with the coach, I was struggling a little bit. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this right off the bat. So I originally reached out to play softball there. Mm. And eventually it did work out, but I'd never really heard back. And then I had heard from the soccer coach is honestly how it happened. Like, she just reached out to me. She's like, we're looking for a couple of goalkeepers. You want to join our team? She was new to the program. It was her second year when I came in. So it was just kind of the balancing act that you don't know what it's going to be like until you start is really what had happened. And so once I had started my fall semester, I was in veterinary technician school, and then I changed my major to rec and sports management. It got a little tough there at the beginning. I found myself not enjoying what I was doing. I liked the soccer aspect. I liked the sports. I took my animal passion and kind of put it to the back burner. I mean, it is what it is. And then I found that sports was really my passion, that there was more to what I could do. So I went that route. And then the balancing act became really simple because a lot of my professors understood that I'm an athlete, I'm going to be doing this, but you still can't slack off, really. So it was just like working with coaches, working with your professors, and like just everything kind of worked together is really how it happened.
How hard was it to do two sports in college? We have so many guys and girls in here that it's so hard to do one. What was it like to do two? Was it easier because it was fall and spring? What are your thoughts on that?
So when you're like playing, when you're in season, it's a lot easier because you put your second sport on the back burner. But when you're in that middle ground of like winter time and like both coaches are like, well, you need to spend time with us. You need to spend time, you know, it's just, it gets hectic and you feel like you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off, to be honest. That's what it felt like back in the college days. But I truly enjoyed it because I don't like to sit still. So it was always like, all right, I got this practice and I got this. I did enjoy my time though to sit down and just relax some days, but I definitely enjoyed the two sport aspect. And I never really found it challenging because a lot of the classroom work that I was doing with my professors and stuff related to back what I was doing in my sports. Mm. So it was very handy to just have that connection between like sport and major.
One of our all-time favorites here at the radio station to cover, and we've had her on the podcast, but you got to play with Lexi Du Bois, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Lex is just like an animal, and you don't want to mess with her, and she's just awesome person on and off the field. What was it like playing with her? And you did get to play with Bella as well?
Yeah, I played with Bella for a season, but Lex and I kind of rode it out until our senior years. Bella transferred to Cortland, obviously, but playing with Lex, I mean, she's a beast. I mean, granted, like, she's a midfielder. I mean, she doesn't spend much time near me when I was on the field, but she's a beast out there. I mean, we're still friends to this day. I mean, she was a great player. I always, anytime I was trying to get the ball up the field, I was looking for her because I knew she could control it, get it up, and get it to the next person.
I'm trying to remember who else would have been local on those teams. So you had Lexi and Bella from South Courtright. Would you have also had Sam from South Courtright, Sam Acuna?
I had Bree Lang.
Oh my gosh, yeah, Bree was there. It was like the whole South Courtright team basically went to SUNY Delhi for a while. I feel like, oh, there was Goodspeed, Rhiannon from Morris was there. So that was cool. Yeah, there was like just a bunch of locals on those teams for a few years. And you guys had a lot of success.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we flipped from her first season, we flipped the record and made it a winning season the first year I played, my freshman year. And then from there, we just kind of grew and grew and grew. And then, unfortunately, our coach did end up leaving to go to Siena, which we thought was great. She was taking her next step into Division One, and I just saw her actually, head coach that we played with our first 3 years. So she's enjoying her time up in Siena, Lauren. And then our senior year, it was a little bit different. You get a new coach in, you're just trying to figure out, you've had the same coaching for the past 3 years, and then you get a new head coach your senior year. So just figuring that out. But even that year, I think just the connection of the players that we had between all the locals that you just mentioned, and then we had a couple of Long Island kids on our team.
I was going to say Kelsey.
Kelsey.
Yeah, she was phenomenal.
She's a beast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
just a real goal scorer from what I remember. But no, that's great. What do you think? We're leaving poor John out here, but we'll get him back in here.
Fine.
But what do you think your college athletic experience helps you with the most in your job now at Springbrook?
I think just having the aspect of a team. As a goalkeeper, I've realized that like you need your team in order to be successful because it's kind of hard to just be the one person on the field that like is always getting the shots taken on you. But I've learned that your team's always going to back you up and that it's just, I don't know, the team's going to back you up is really what it is. And that's what I've realized at Springbrook, is somebody's always going to be there to help you out. Like, you're never going to be alone. Everybody in the hallways at work, like, if you're struggling with a student or something or communication, everybody's working together to make sure that that student can be the most successful. But not only the student, but the staff as well. So that's one thing that I've kind of carried over from my sports, is that you just need that team mentality, and everything's usually going to go pretty smoothly.
John, to to transition back to the basketball tournament, one thing I was thinking about the other day is, how much work is it for you and your staff to put this all together? You got teams coming from all over the place. You got to set up the games, the volunteers, the referees. How much work is it behind the scenes?
It's very time-consuming some days. I mean, the marketing department has been great. They've been a huge help the last couple of years. I think they were kind of a newer bunch of marketing team is fairly young. So the first couple of years was a little bit challenging, but as they started taking this on, they enjoyed it, I think, as much as I do once the event happens. Getting it to that point, you know, it can be challenging. Volunteers, it seems to be harder and harder sometimes to get volunteers to help out. Coaches, you know, it's hit or miss on the year. If I have returning coaches, I love my returning coaches. Oh, it's less work for me. but, you know, we have some great new coaches at our lower level team this year for Team Orange, and they're new, but it's very exciting to have them. So I'm really excited to see what they can do with that team. And my skills coaches are, you know, consistent. And my varsity level, we'll call it Team Black now, is consistent as well. But, you know, it's just, emailing, reaching out. I have high contacts at Hartwick and SUNY Oneonta. I have some contacts at Oneonta High School. Just utilizing those contacts. And I'm all about, like, if you're in a school or a public school and your students need volunteer hours, let me know. I've been signing off on those volunteer sheets for years. So I'm more than willing to help them out if they're willing to help me out. You know, it's a long day, but it goes quick because there's so much going on. It's not like you're sitting stationary for a long period of time. You get a free lunch out of it, which is always nice.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I think this is our ninth year doing this basketball tournament. And I think when, you know, Nicole and I first started this, it was very, very, you know, uncharted territory for us.
Yeah.
Like we've been to tournaments and stuff like that. How can we make our tournament good? How can we make this appealing? And I think just adding another event, you know, to our local teams and trying to get them involved has been a benefit. And teams keep coming back year after year, which is very helpful.
Yeah, everybody that day when I came over last year just seemed thrilled, happy. One thing that made me chuckle is I walk in and I notice one of the referees is Albert Odero, that guy can jump out of the gym. He can absolutely fly. He's playing, you know, he's an Oneonta High School grad. And I think he left early for prep school, but he went to Oneonta High School. And now he's playing professionally. He's overseas right now in Africa.
He's in Kenya, right?
In Kenya. And so he's playing, and like I'm watching his videos, and I'm like, how cool was that he was there last year? Did he put on a show for any of the guys?
I think he definitely had his fun. It was really great having him. We did struggle last year to get referees. This year, I'm in a good spot with referees.
Good.
So that's definitely a positive for this year. Albert, I reached out to the YMCA, Jason, who works there, and he basically got me connected with Albert, and Albert kind of helped me out and just reached out to people he knew. And then we had officials, you know, they weren't certified officials, but they were guys who knew the game, and he definitely interacted with the athletes really well. I think he threw a couple dunks down and he showed his jumping ability, and the athletes were just complete awe of Albert. Yeah. It was kind of really fun to watch him interact with the players.
I talked to him the other day and I said, hey, whenever your season's done and you're home, it's always been a goal of mine to get him on the show and talk about his journey from Oneonta to prep school to a couple stops for D1 basketball. And now kind of this unique professional journey that he's taking where he's overseas. He's just trying to keep that basketball going as much as he can. So, John, what else is going on this spring at Springbrook? I know you have track coming up, which I know last time we talked, it doesn't always get the same amount of participation, but anything going on track-wise? Will you guys host a meet this year?
Yeah, so we actually have our athletic program up. So we have the track and field. We run practices once a week for an hour, and we have about 15 kids on the track team this year, which is a good number. It's a great number for our program. Some new faces that, you know, came along, and I think we might have got somebody new yesterday to try it out, which is great about track and field is, you know, basketball, you have to make that team. You got to get the set. You got to have the practices. Like track, you know, oh, I just heard about this track team. Can we join? Yeah, absolutely. Come on. Just come to practices at least. You know, you may not compete, but at least come to practices, be a part of the program. That's what I kind of like about the track and field. It's just so much more relaxed of a feeling. I think I put two or three meets together. Suni Oniana stepped out with one of their programs. Unfortunately, the person that was running that program left. So this year is going to be kind of a challenge. I'm trying to use some of my contacts, reach out to see if we can try to throw something together quick, which is helpful. Hopefully we can make something work. But if anybody out there is willing to help host a track meet for Special Olympics, definitely get a hold of me. So okay. That'd be very helpful.
Would you guys be willing to have it at a high school?
Absolutely. I've had it at high school twice now.
Okay.
I'm just trying to get a hold of some of the people there and trying to see if we can swing something like that this year.
Okay. Yeah, that would be, I'd be great. I'm just thinking of my contacts or who might listen to this. And one of the athletic directors might say, hey, we got a free date where we could do that. Because I've noticed, and this kind of goes into my next question, is we've had a bunch of schools recently that get a brand new track, gets all redone, and then their track numbers are really low. They might use the track one time, or there was a couple schools last year that had a brand new track essentially and didn't host a meet. So for you to say, hey, we have 15 kids coming out for track, I'm seeing so much at the high school level where we're struggling to get numbers, we're merging schools. Are you finding in the Springbrook world that your participation is still pretty strong?
I think the athletes we have, because we are able to have that, you know, Special Olympics is 8 to
right.
whenever they can go to. So we have people in their 60s participating on our teams that they look forward to it so much. It's like that time to get outside of their community home or get outside of their typical daily life and be a part of something else and see old friends and make new friends and travel New York State, or, you know, like even like a couple of years ago, like 2018, we went to, you know, Seattle for those USA Games. That was a whole nother world for those athletes, and they had the opportunity. I think they just live for that socialization. It's not so much the actual game itself sometimes. I think it's just that socializing with people that they have fun with, and it's just being there. And I think word of mouth sometimes helps. And, you know, we always look for more athletes. I think our basketball program, our numbers right now, I just did the data yesterday. I think we're over 40
wow.
athletes between two basketball teams and our skills team. I'm not saying those athletes are going to come to every single practice or be a part of every single event, but we have, you know, 40 people, athletes that are involved in it. And then our young athletes program is, you know, starting up again in April, which is really great.
Is that the Sprouts?
Yeah, it's our Springbrook Sprouts, we call it that. It's a young athletes program. It's for 2 to 7-year-olds. It's inclusive, so with and without disabilities. We're going to be running that on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I believe it's 5 to 6 o'clock starting, I think, April 9th. We're going to have sign-ups posted online soon for that, and we kind of max that out around 25 participants, and that will be over on the campus off of Route 7. The old St. Mary's gym, and they'll be in there for an hour just working on fun games, activities, dancing, movement, just, you know, a nice time to bond with all those young children.
So one thing that we had talked about bringing up today is I'm curious if you see this or if someone listening is thinking this, but it's like, how does a family know when to reach out to you guys? Because it's like, it has to be such a tough thing to reach out and say, I want to get my kid involved in this, but when is the right time? Different times of the year, everybody's busy. How do you know when to make that call, or is the door just always open at Springbrook?
The door is pretty much always open. Obviously, I'm not going to say join now when there's only like 2 weeks left.
Right.
Because we want that time. I've had athletes that they never competed ever at an event, but they come to practices. It's a socialization. I've had parents come to me, say, you know, we're just happy to have my child be a part of something. And, you know, it may not be successful for the first few weeks, but I'm sure Rachel can definitely attest this coaching with me. You know, you see the athletes that struggle, and they just don't get the skill. But by the end of the season, they're starting to understand what the expectation is, and it's just taking that time. So, I mean, really, whenever you think your child's ready, and if you think your child can't do it, we're going to find a way to help you out. If you're going to be a supportive parent or have supportive care with them, we can make it work. And I promise we can make that child participate.
That's something that really stuck out to me from the last time you were here, is that there was this, I don't know the right word for it, stigma, I guess, of like, well, my kid won't be able to play in the games, so maybe I shouldn't bring them. And I loved what you said and what you just said now of like, no, just come and we'll work on those skills and just get better. The games don't matter.
Yeah, the games don't matter. I mean, I wish to say that we had a great like 20-game season or right. 15-game season, but we probably average about 4 tournament events or meets a year. It's not an overwhelming amount of time, but bringing them to practices, it's a weekly thing. It's an aspect, you know, it's a routine, which routine's great for anybody, including people with disabilities, typical or not. We all love routine.
Oh, yeah.
And it just, it's you're building on that. And when they start showing promise, when they start showing the ability to wait and be patient, and, you know, we'll bring them into a home event or a local event. And that's why I'm so big on our local soccer event and so big on our basketball event, because those are our students that, you know, typically probably wouldn't go to Rochester for an overnight trip with us. But, you know, this is an opportunity to bring them. You're close to home, so if something really does happen where they can't handle it, you can just leave. And, we tried this year. We could try again next year.
Right.
And, you know, eventually we'll get to that point. We've had many athletes that, you know, just practice. They finally figured it out. They started competing, and now they're, you know, they're not on the basketball team and not on the skills team. So it takes time. It's growth, development,
so
practice.
Cool. Yeah. Just great success stories. That's what I love. And Rachel, to come back to you, John had said that you went to the Special Olympics in Orlando. Is that correct? And
yeah.
Tell us about how that all shaped up and what that experience was like.
So I was part of the NCAA National SAC Student Athletic Advisory Committee. So each school has a lower like SAC levels, like campus-wide SACs their sports. But I went up to the national level for NCAA. So we're speaking for all the Division III student athletes. So through NCAA Division III, we have a partnership with Special Olympics. So they knew that I was super involved into that stuff. They knew I enjoyed it. So they had asked me, I was in Indianapolis for a meeting, and they're like, do you want to go to Orlando for the USA Games this year? And I was like, I mean,
sure.
Yeah. Like, is that even a question? And so we ended up getting everything figured out when I had to get down there and stuff. And from the moment I got there to the moment I left, I don't think I ever stopped smiling, because the games that you're watching, the connections you're building with one another, the coaches, the players, I mean, there's sports that I don't get to see up in this area. I mean, flag football is
cool.
A big thing down there as well, at other campuses as well. They'll have, I can't remember what they call it, but like it's integrative of like Special Olympic athletes and then college athletes as well.
Oh,
the Unified
wow.
program.
Unified. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Unified programs and stuff. And just seeing how big that was, watching the tracks, like the people run around the track. I mean, everything about that, those 4 days down there was like absolutely insane. And the opening ceremony, even better. I mean, that was like the most electrifying time that Special Olympics probably has every year. Like the opening ceremony, I believe is probably one of like the top favorites for people. And I'm sure John can attest to that, being that he saw the one in Seattle.
Yeah, you said it was great, right?
It was absolutely amazing. It was almost to the point where it was overwhelming. It was just, there's so much going on. There was, you know, we had a famous DJ, they had some artists there, and the athletes were just overjoyed, excited. It was just the wall of color that you saw, because every state had their own color, and you just saw colors all over this field. And Nicola went, and she was up and one like up higher up, and she had some great like field level shots of like just the colors and the energy, and it was. It's probably one of the highlights of my life and my career in coaching and being involved in athletics was those 7 days out there were
that's crazy
exhausting, but at the same time it was an amazing experience, like something I don't think you can put into words. You really just have to be a part of it.
Rachel, what do you remember about the opening ceremony that you saw? Like, what stuck out the most?
Just all the athletes coming in and like the people I was there with. I mean, they're from. they're from the National High School Association out of Indianapolis at NFHS, I think it is.
Yeah.
We were talking about how, like, how many athletes from each state actually come. Like, because sometimes, I mean, they can get the bid to go to the Olympics, but they don't necessarily not always have the money or the budget or the fundraising to be able to go. So we were wondering, like, from what states do most athletes come from? Obviously, Florida had the most that year, being that it was in their home state. But, I mean, just seeing how many athletes were showing up and playing their sports was absolutely insane to me. I mean, the stadium was filled. It's where it was in Orlando Pride Stadium, NWSL team.
Yeah.
So that was even better. I mean, it was so cool to just be in that stadium, too. I mean, I wasn't watching soccer, but the feeling of being in a stadium like that, too, and feeling – I mean, there was thousands of people there. I mean, it wasn't – and it was like the first year that Special Olympics really opened things up after COVID. I mean, it was – there was still
a little bit
structured of stay, like, your distance apart and stuff, but it was even – it didn't matter at that point. Everything was outside. I mean,
being that it was post COVID, did you feel like almost like a sigh of relief? Like, oh, this felt like a little bit of normalcy.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of normalcy down there.
It's like I got to travel. I got to be outside. Yeah. We got sports. Oh, that's so cool. John, do you think Springbrook will get a chance to go back and make a big trip like that again in the future?
I mean, we would love to again. It was so much fun.
Did you have to qualify?
Yeah, so there's a sweat qualification during a qualifying year, which is usually the year before state game for the USA games. Mm. You qualify, and basically if you – whatever division you're in, if you are a gold medal team at the highest level of competition, which usually is the state games that year – you can qualify, and they ask if this is something that your team can do. Is this going to be a challenge? Can you make this work? You say yes or no. If you say yes, you go into a bid. Basically, it's like more like a pull the hat name out of the hat type thing.
Gotcha.
And then basically from there, you get your team that can go, and then you get a runner-up team just in case it falls through. And then you start figuring out how you're going to raise money or how Special Olympics is going to help you raise the money, and you're going to go. It would be a cool experience. I don't think it matters what team. A track is different because it's not so much a team. It's individual. So, like, you could have an individual. I had a young lady who actually qualified for international games a couple of years ago when I was going to Abu Dhabi.
Wow.
Unfortunately, though, she needs so much more care and help and assistance with personal stuff that we just couldn't have her go.
Right.
But it was unique to get that bid and that chance because, you know, she wasn't the fastest runner in the world, but she did get gold for her division at a state-level competition for the 800 meters.
Wow.
So she was able to, you know, qualify, but unfortunately we had to say, I'm sorry, but it's not going to work out for that individual.
Yeah, that trip would have been...
It would have been very unique, yeah. I've met a couple athletes that went to that that event, and they have some cool stories about that city.
Wow. Rachel, for any of my high school listeners or college listeners, how did you get involved with the SAC program once you were at school? Because I feel like it's one of those things you hear about it, but no one ever tells anybody, like, hey, this is how I got involved. Like, how did you find that?
So it was kind of like one of the situations that you just explained. I kind of just was like, oh, there's a SAC meeting, like, whatever.
Yeah, like, what is
but
this?
It,
yeah.
So what had ended up happening is we had a couple of graduating seniors on our soccer team, and my coach needed someone to fill it. She picked the most people with the most responsibility, I guess you would say, or leadership, to be a voice for our team, essentially. So she asked us, and I was like, I mean, sure. I mean, I didn't really turn much down in college. I was just like always took every opportunity that I could to make the most out of my college experience. But I got involved just because I got asked by a coach to do it. And then I kind of stuck with it. We were a little rough to start out. Just we had a lot of changeover with seniors and stuff. Our SAC program wasn't really built up. And then once I got to the national level, I realized that what our SAC should really be doing, and I brought that information back to Delhi with me, and I said, listen, we need to start running events. We need to start doing this, and I kind of help grow the program without necessarily being, like, a person in, like, leadership position just because I was on national SAC, and it was a lot to just even just do both. And then I was a part of our conference SAC as well. So you have your campus SAC, your conference SAC, and then your national SAC. So it was just a lot of
So you went all in.
Yeah, a lot of student engagement through everything. And it was just getting involved in it, I think, just even helped me start being even more of a leader, being a voice for our student athletes, even on campus.
What was it about the program once you got in that you said, hey, I want to take it to the next level. I want to do the national thing. Did you just really enjoy it that much?
I think it was nice having that ability to be a leader off the field as well. When you're a goalkeeper, everyone's like, well, you're a natural born leader. You're in the goal, you're commanding the field. And it was like, it wasn't always like that for me. I didn't always feel like I commanded the field. I was a goalkeeper. I was good at what I did, but that's all I did. And then having that voice off the field really helped me mature into my role of just taking everything, taking the opportunities, teaching people what you really can do. And it doesn't have to just be play your sport, go home, get up, play your sport again.
Right.
You can do the other things. You can make opportunities grow for your fellow athletes and even people younger for you to watch you have that development through the years too.
How did you deal? I'm always amazed with goalies. How did you deal with the pressure of, like, I am the last line of defense. I make the big save. I'm the hero. If the goal goes in, maybe I'm the scapegoat. You know what I mean? So, like, how did you deal with that over the years? It's a lot of pressure.
It definitely was a lot of pressure. It wasn't easy. Every game was different. You kind of just, like I said before, I had my team to back me up. They're always like, we're going to be here whether we win the game or lose the game. Obviously, you hold yourself to a higher standard. I believe every player usually does. They're like, I let the team down type of situation. And as a goalkeeper, you're always in that mentality. So it was definitely hard. I definitely worked really hard with, like, my mental health and stuff to make sure that I could just be the best player that I could be, but also, like, person, and didn't let it eat me alive, I guess you would say. If we lost a game, we lost a game. I mean, there's going to be another game coming up. I always remember, like, the games that I had in my hands, and I was like, and we just missed it by one goal, that it was a savable ball.
Right.
I still think about them to this day. I mean, even though I'm 3 years out of college, I think, I still think about them. I still think about my last game that I had. I mean, it's hard, but you just got to take things with a grain of salt. I've learned that, and then you just kind of move on from it.
I guess for both of you guys, and Rachel, we'll start with you. How do you take those moments, whether it's being a player or a coach, and pass those lessons on to your athletes? I feel like no matter what level you're coaching, youth to high school to college, that getting that message to your athletes has to be the hardest thing, I would think, of like getting them to understand in those moments, like, hey, it's okay. The mental health part that you talked about. What's your message to your athletes as you kind of go off of what you've done and try to pass those lessons on to them?
I just say keep trying. I mean, I didn't just become great at goalkeeping. It took time. It took practice. And I think I coached our team the first year I started Special Olympics at Springbrook. I was an assistant coach with our team. And then this past year I dropped down to skills, because I really wanted to work on the development with the players. I wanted to work on their confidence. I want to be able to get some of our players that are on skills up to that team. So I really just tried to push, like, listen, it takes practice. And like John said, I mean, there's some practices that, like, your kids are just not understanding the concepts. But then you get to the last practice of the season and you're like, oh, my God, if we just had about five more practices, we'd be golden. So it's just like pushing that concept of nobody's perfect, but it's going to take time and you'll build those skills over time.
John, for you, same thing. Like in your years with Springbrook and going off your, you know, your past coaching and past teaching experiences, what's the biggest hurdle for you to pass along those little nuggets to the athletes so that they learn about everything that's going on?
I mean, a lot of times it's modeling and, you know, teaching them how to do things properly and slowing them down, maybe using different objects sometimes to make it more successful. You know, I'm in a lucky situation where I have the opportunity with Special Olympics and I have working with those individuals, but at the same time I have my own children, which is great, and I'm coaching them. you know, in their sports and their games. So I'm involved in that as well, which is, you know, I can take stuff from Special Olympics and push it into, you know, my soccer practices and vice versa. I can pull stuff that I like love doing in my soccer practice. I'm like, I think my guys can do this in Special Olympics.
Yeah.
And I could throw it over here and, you know, talking in the community with some, you know, people that, you know, listen, this is an opportunity. Like, I you know, we're talking about your child who you wanted to do things with. Let's bring them over, you know, and I tell them that this is opportunities. Can your child do this? They're like, yeah. I'm like, then they can compete. Like, that's all it takes. Like,
right.
And I say soccer, basketball, track and field. If your child can run a straight line, we're good. you know, or if your child can kick a ball, we can shape that into dribbling, passing, and shooting. So, like, that's easy. Like, basketball, same thing. You know, getting to that sometimes, that ball to the hoop is a little challenging. But the dribbling and the passing drills that we do for individual skills, they're not hard. Shooting is the biggest challenge we deal with, but I have a young lady who I think she's been in Special Olympics longer than I've been around. She couldn't hit the rim.
Right.
She could not hit the rim. She was on skills. She can barely hit the rim. And then now I saw her practice last Wednesday. I went to practice and watched her. She's on Team Orange, and she was shooting foul shots and, like, you know, outside of the key and making shots. And I'm like, she's a totally different athlete. She
right.
grew. She found her strength. She found the form. She found the ability of using her legs. You know, it's just practice. I always say the more touches, the better you're going to be at anything.
Yeah, the time that they've put in, as with any of us, I mean, it's going to pay off, and it has for them. I mean, I was amazed at the championship game last year. Your guys were putting up a ton of points. It wasn't like a low-scoring game. Like, they were getting out in transition. They were running. They're going all out, and they scored a ton of points, and they were into it. It was an enjoyable game.
Yeah, and we got a couple new faces on that team too, which I'm really excited to see how they bond and grow as a team this year for that too. I think the biggest thing about a championship game for them was they've been beat so many times by that one team. I think it was like,
oh, really?
It's been stressful. We've had a lot of struggling years, and all of a sudden, like, the team clicked and they were looking good. And I think that's the point. They're like, they just had a blast, I think, because, you know, think about that team that you always lose to and you want to win, and then finally you get a chance to pull one out. Like, I think that brought a lot of joy to their lives.
Yeah, they were pumped. I was just glad I could be there. It was so much fun to watch those guys, and a little bit of a celebration afterwards. They were pumped.
They were very excited.
Even though it may not be your area of expertise, but I was hoping to ask you about the therapeutic riding program that you guys have. Is there, just in case a listener out there is interested in that?
I don't know a ton about that. It's really done a lot in the community, our residential houses.
Gotcha. Okay.
They actually, we bring students to horseback riding, and they get an opportunity to sit on a horse and ride it for therapy needs. And I don't know, Rachel, have you ever brought anybody to horseback riding?
I haven't brought anyone, but I have talked to a lot of staff members who do it. They love watching the kids just sit on the horse. It's like the most independent that like a child could be at that moment.
Right.
I know that the scholarship just went out for it and stuff on our website. And it's pretty local. I think there's a place in Sydney.
Yeah, there's a place in Unadilla that I drive by often. There's always a bus there. There's always kids, and they have an indoor and an outdoor riding facility. And I just feel like locally, it's just kind of this like hidden secret that we have, this hidden gem.
Definitely.
So I think it's really great that some of your Springbrook athletes will have a chance to go and do that. So
yeah, I've heard stories of, you know, students who I'm very surprised that they are riding these horses, and they're definitely braver than me. I'm a little sketchy around horses. They kind of scare me a little bit, but you know, they get on these animals. They're huge, and I've heard they love it. They're enjoyed by it. I've had students unable to go to Special Olympics because the horseback riding was the same night as practice. But at the same time, is that something they enjoy? Then let them do that.
Let them do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that connection. I think once you know, talking to other people that we've had in here that are part of that horse community, it's like once you have that connection, can be life-changing. So I think it's great that we have that local opportunity. So,
and we don't offer it, but Special Olympics does have an equestrian program.
Really?
Yeah, they have equestrian competitions. It's a fall sport. You do need special certification, not like your typical coaching certification for Special Olympics. It's a little bit above and beyond because obviously you're dealing with a whole nother animal.
Yeah, right.
Literally. But yeah, they do offer that program too, which is it's a fairly popular one for some of our athletes.
John, how did the fall soccer tournament go? I saw some photos down at the Hall of Fame field. What an awesome place to have it. How did it go?
Yeah, that was a little stressful going to that event. We got a lot of rain, and field, unfortunately, at Springbrook does not drain that great. So it was very muddy, very wet. Rachel can definitely attest to that. So I recently joined the board for the Oneonta Soccer Club.
Oh, good. I know they were saying they need new people.
Yeah, I joined last fall, and I've been a coach for, this is my third year at the Oneonta Soccer Club, you know, coaching my own son. And I reached out to the field coordinator and I said, can you help me out? Yeah. Like, I'm desperate. I got this event coming up tomorrow and I don't have a field to play this on. And those right fields, they drain so well. They're
amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that they're the last surviving of the grass fields probably in our area, and they are top quality. And
yeah.
I appreciate this Oneonta Soccer Club for keeping those fields going, which is great. I know it's a huge expense for the program, but it's definitely worthwhile. And we had it there. It was smooth, I felt. I think we had a couple hiccups that we're going to fix next year. But for the most part, I think we just need to get more teams there. I think that's my biggest thing. I would like to see more teams in the program. But the U-10 soccer field is the same exact field for Special Olympics.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
It worked out perfectly. The field was already there.
Yeah.
It's a field I'm used to because I coached the U-10 program. So I already knew where everything was. I was able to set it up in the morning. The volunteers came. It worked out. You know, it worked out as well as it could. It literally was like a day or two before we changed locations.
Wow.
It was really a swing.
Stressful.
It was a little stressful.
So hectic.
But in all reality, I think it's a great relationship, and I'm going to try to keep that as our home event location, I think, going forward, because we don't have to worry about the muddiness and the flooding and the opportunity in trying to plan. And I think, you know, having in the fall and trying to plan on a Saturday or Sunday when there's not, you know, the fall travel or rec programs going on, that I can try to fit in a tournament for a day.
I was covering some of the league championships there 2 years ago, and it was beautiful in the morning, and then this rainstorm rolled in that would have canceled 99% of other games, and it poured, and I thought, there's no way they're going to get these games in. And they start the games, and then the storm hits, and they're playing through it, and I'm like, there's no way this field can handle it. And the drainage was so good, they got those games in, and then they were able to play games after that. And I'm like, any other field would have mud puddles and a river running through it. I mean, this was a torrential downpour. So I just can't say enough how lucky we are to have those fields, and to the Oneonta Soccer Club for keeping them going, because without them, who knows? Like, that could have turned back into a farmer's field, you know? And it's like, these are fields that were built for international top level competition, and we're lucky to have them. So Rachel, you were laughing, like, with the rain that day, were you there helping out? Like, what was it like from the goalie perspective?
Well, so I've been in the position of being on a field in torrential downpours at Delhi. I mean, our field never drained well.
How sad are you that you missed the turf by like 2 years? They have brand new turf up there now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sad, but it's okay. It's okay. Honestly, we like sliding around in mud. I got my jersey back when I graduated, and you can still see some of the mud stains on it because you could just never get it
out. Not coming out, yeah.
But for being at the right fields, it was really fun to just have – you had space too. Like, the kids were – you weren't on one field. You had the space to use the other fields. And you couldn't even tell that it, like, rained and rained and rained right before that event. It was just insane.
It's insane. I don't get it. Like, whatever's under those fields is
it's amazing.
Top-notch.
It's amazing.
Wherever that water's going, look out. Like, it's got to be a river somewhere. But
yeah.
Oh, that's so cool. What a great event and a great place to have it. So, well, as we hit the home stretch here, John, you know, last time you were here, we talked about some success stories. Is there anybody else that pops into your mind, and Rachel too, a recent success story that you guys would want to share?
I'd say our fall soccer team did really well this year. They had a very winning record. I think they lost one game.
Right.
And that actually happened to be the state game in the finals.
Oh, man.
In overtime.
Oh.
So,
heartbreaker.
I mean, it is a heartbreaker. And it was so much fun, and it was so intense and so exciting to watch. And like, it's amazing how, you know, I don't think it matters what level of sport you are watching, but when you have a tight, close game, it is so exciting to watch. You know, no one likes to see a blowout.
No.
I mean, even coaching a blowout, it's awful. Both sides of it. It's just not fun. You're trying to, you know, either A, just trying to get more points on the board, or B, you're trying to, like, not alleviate some of the pressure and trying to put your, you know, the players you don't get as much playing time in at that moment.
Yep.
And it's a challenge. But those close games, like, it's just, it brings all that excitement and energy out and tension. And, you know, I had a goalkeeper, he let the you know, game-winning goal in. But at the same time, as we had like many opportunities to score, so he's frustrated, he's upset. I had to talk him down because he's upset, and right. I had to say, "Listen, it happened. It's over. It's done. There's nothing you can do about it now." Like, it was raining and wet that day too, actually, up in Queensbury, where we had the state games this year, and you know, it just took some time to calm him down. But and the athletes were disappointed. But at the same time, I think they were proud. Like, you just played one heck of a soccer game. It was exciting to watch. It was fun. You know, I don't think winning or losing is any big thing when you have an exciting game. Yes, it's exciting to be on the winning side of a close game. But at the same time, is you were part of a really exciting game. And yes, you're on the losing side this time. But next time?
Yeah.
Maybe you'll be on the winning side.
Those are the ones you learn from and you'll always remember. So... That's great.
I actually saw that athlete that had, you know, an issue, you know, the goalkeeper, and he saw me in the community, I think a month or two later, and he came up to me and apologized for his behavior and says, you know, I'm just so frustrated and so upset. And I go, I get it.
Yeah.
I said, he goes, I don't want to do that again. I go, that's a great that you're thinking that way and, you know, keeping a positive, calm head. Like, you did the best of your ability. You played as best as you could. Everybody else played to their best of their ability. It just happened the way it happened, and that's life.
Yeah.
Go on, try again, you know, next year.
The lessons that we learn from sports. Yeah. Rachel, any success stories from the work that you've been doing?
I mean, there's probably tons of stories, but the one that comes into mind, I mean, when I dropped down to skills, I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to expect out of this. I'm just going to work on the developmental skills for the basic skills for soccer.
Right.
And there is a couple of athletes that I had that I was like, oh, I don't know if they're going to be any – they're going to even be able to participate at state games. And when we brought them out onto the field at state games and I just – they needed one prompt to just be able to do something, I was like, wow, this is insane. It was so nice to just see that just – they're like, oh, I've been doing this all along. And they finally just were like – it clicked. And it was just – and I think – Megan and I said that every one of our athletes at least got gold in their divisions. I think,
wow.
Except for maybe a couple of athletes, but for the majority of our athletes, they got gold in our skills division.
Makes you feel good too as a coach, I'm sure.
So. I was smiling ear to ear that day, even as soaked as we were and wet and cold.
Well, John, if anybody is listening and wants more information, if you want to toss out the website or any other ways to keep up with what you guys are doing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Springbrook, ny.org, and there's an athletic section on there, and you can definitely go on that section and check anything that's coming up or going on right then and there. You can follow us on Facebook as well. If you're not going to just get sports, you're going to get everything we do.
Yeah.
If you have really interest about Special Olympics with Springbrook, you do not have to receive services. It's fully open to anybody in the area or community. And if someone's listening that's not near Oneonta and needs, you know, a place to participate, there are other clubs in our area that you can reach. There's one in Edmiston with Pathfinder.
True.
There's teams down in Binghamton that you can be a part of. So there's other teams that, you know, if you're much closer to Binghamton, you know, opportunity down there. But if you have any questions or you want to reach out to help volunteer or be a part of anything, even as volunteer for the event or volunteer at practices or anything like that, SpecialOlympics@springbrookny.org.
Awesome.
It's simple.
We can't let you guys go. And John, we'll ask you this again in case your answer has changed. And we'll see what Rachel says. But favorite local place to eat? That's the fan favorite question. Everyone's dying to know. John, how about you?
Yo, it's still Wise Guys. Yeah. Wise Guys Sammy's. I can't go wrong with that place. I do love their sandwiches.
I went in there the other day. The smell just like pulls you in off the street.
Every time, so. Every time I walk by, I'm looking by. I run. You know, I start with my running partner every Tuesday and Thursday, or we run by the area. You know, on the Saturday mornings, and I run by. I'm like, that'd be good for lunch this Saturday. You know. And I'm like, I gotta come. Somebody fight the urge not to eat out all the time. So, but yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites still to this day.
Good choice, Rachel. For you,
I'd have to go with the Undercover Eggplant.
Yes.
That is probably one of my tops that, since I've moved down here. I've been like, yep. Anytime I'm like, I don't know what to have for dinner.
Yep, that's the spot. Just had it the other day myself, so yeah, can't complain about some Undercover. So, well, guys, thank you so much. Really appreciate it, and you know, we'll keep doing this, kind of becoming an annual thing. So yeah,
thanks for having us back.
Yeah, glad to do it. So again, check anything out. You can go back and listen to John's first episode, and I'm sure we'll do some more. And follow Springbrook. I'm hoping to go over to the basketball tournament here in a few weeks and check that out. So again, a big thank you to John and Rachel, and we'll see you again soon on the Nate Law Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Law Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.